I want to see heaven. Every time I think about all that Jesus has done for us and why he did it for us, I want to see heaven. I want to see this place that he's planned out for us. It's been quite a while since I had an opportunity to address TBC. For those who don't know me, I've been here for around about 30 years. But it's been a while since I last stood at the front. A few things have changed. The last time I spoke in front of TBC, we were at the school hall. The last time I spoke at TBC, there was no talk of this global news item called COVID. Since I last spoke at TBC, we hear talk of how in our future years we'll be discovering more and more that the gospel itself will be considered hate speech. For a long time, obviously, that the gospel has been around, it has been God's message to us. It's been God's message to us to invite us to be with him forever. The gospel was never intended to be a message to get people to church. It was a message to get people to the kingdom. But for a long time, we used it as a message to get people to the church. It's time, I believe, that the church, and I'm not talking individually here, I'm talking about the collective church. I'm not even talking about TBC, I'm talking about the church. It's time for us to live for Jesus. It's time for us to get back on and run the race, to head in the direction that God intended us to be. It's time for us to realize that we were never called to be believers, we were called to be followers. We need to drop everything that hinders us, and we need to move forward. When I was a young kid, I was pretty active young kid. I love sport. For those who know me know that I run a football ministry, I love football. As a kid growing up, I would play as much football as I could. I used to run to school so that I could play as much football before the bell, and then I'd run home so I could play as much football before dinner. I remember when I was about 12 years old, my brother said to me one day, "Let's go for a run." At the end of our street was this block. It was about a kilometre. And we both ran around that block. He went 20 times and I went 19. I remember on another occasion, my brother I've got 11, nine brothers and sisters, so when I say my brother, it could be any of them. But I remember one of my brothers and a few of our friends, we decided to go for a run one day. If you're familiar with the North Shore where we lived, we ran from Glenfield to Greenhithe to Albany to Morangi Bay, down the beaches to Milford, and then back home. And we wanted to keep going. I remember that after we did that, my brother and I planned to run the length of New Zealand. We never did it. But I just wanted to keep going. When I went to Westlake Boys, I played in the school first 11 football team, and I used to play three games in a weekend, and it still didn't feel like enough. I was the school cross-country champion when I left school, and I just loved it. I just loved running. Just loved being active, loved being sporty. I remember I moved over here when I was about 27, and I quickly found myself some running courses to do, and mostly looking for hilly ones, which is pretty much all there is around here. And I remember when I was about 30, I decided, you know what, even though I was still playing football, at some stage I'm going to do a marathon. So I set up myself a couple of courses. So on a Tuesday, I used to run a course that was about 15K, and on Thursday, I'd run the same course. And then on Saturday, I found a course that was 30K, and I used to run that. The end of the course was up the Waikamati, it's about 28K in, running up Waikamati Hill. And I remember I used to run up there, and I used to fly up there because I wanted to see how fast I could go while my legs were still pretty dead. About 12 years ago, I had been getting for a little while these pains in my knees, so I went to a physio, and he recommended me to a knee surgeon, and he said, "Well, you've got loose cartilage, so you need to have cartilage removed." So I had cartilage removed from my knee. A couple of years later, I was in Brazil on one of my football missions, and my right knee was giving me a bit of pain. And so when I came back from Brazil, I went and saw the surgeon, and he said, "Oh, you've got cartilage problem." And I said, "You know what? I don't think I'll have the op this time." So I didn't have the op on that one. I had the op on the left one, and my left one now, even as I'm talking to you right now, I have pain in my left knee. I have it every day. My full Full-time occupation is as a football coach. Most days I'm walking, if you've got your, those of you who keep the little tabs on your phones or your watches, I usually, most days when I'm coaching, I'm doing about 20,000 steps a day. And my knee's always sore, I've discovered something. I'm getting old. When you're young, you don't think about it. I remember thinking when I was a little kid that I was going to turn 37 at the turn of the millennium. And I thought way back then, wow, but that's ages away. Now I look back and it was ages ago. But we're aging. And I've got to be honest with you, I don't like it. I want to run around like I did before. And I coach football teams and I want to be as active in training and running around with the kids and playing football as I did before, but I can't. In 10 years' time, my body will be even worse. And 10 years after that, it'll be even worse because I'm aging. But this isn't something ever God designed for us. God never designed us to age. He never designed our bodies to go down, but we've just got used to it. Over 6,000 years, human beings have just got used to it. It's just what happens. It's just what life is. But it's never what he intended. God had never intended for us to suffer heart failure or pneumonia or cancer, Alzheimer's, paralysis, flu, malaria, COVID, or death. That's not how he made us. Not at the start. He didn't create us so we'd steal or lie or fight or abuse or abandon or kill. He didn't give us tongues that would dishonor or insult or deceive or swear. He didn't build a world that had earthquakes, tornadoes and floods and storms and tsunamis. That's not what God made. What he made was perfect. He made a perfect world. And when he made it, none of these things would have ever happened. But we took up an invitation from the devil. You can be like God. You can control these things. Don't let God control them. You control them. And we took up the invitation and we proved that we can't. We can't control this world. We can't control the evil that affects our world. We even struggle with our own. We're out of control. But our arrogance has led us to that. Evil has created destruction and disaster and death. The thief comes to kill and to steal and destroy. But Jesus said, I have come that you might have life and have it in all its fullness. One of the things that's been really evident to me over this period, if we want to call this period the COVID period, is what it's done to people in our world. It's put them in a state of fear. But most of that fear is generated around one topic, the fear of death. But you only really fear death when what comes after is worse. Because we as believers don't fear death. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? It's not something to be feared. Paul said, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. What did he mean by that statement? It wasn't a suicidal statement. Paul wasn't saying, I want to die. What he was saying was, my motivation for life is because what I get to enjoy in death. And he proved it. He was with Barnabas one day and they went to this place called Lystra. And Paul was doing as he normally does. He was preaching the gospel. And as he was preaching the gospel, the people tried to stop him. And in trying to stop him, they threw him to the ground. They picked up rocks and they threw them at Paul until they believed that Paul was dead. And then they got his body and they dragged it out of the town because they didn't want a rotting corpse in the middle of town. Later on, Barnabas goes to pick up Paul's body. And when he goes to pick it up, there's still life in it. And he helps Paul come back to normal health. And after Paul is healthy again, what does he do? He goes out and he preaches the gospel. Why? Because for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. Paul was on his way to Jerusalem and he knew that in going to Jerusalem, he was heading for danger. The one place where he had more enemies than anywhere else. And as he was on his journey to Jerusalem, he was met by this old man who took Paul's belt and he tied himself up. And he said, if you go to Jerusalem, this is what will happen to you. You will be tied and you will be bound and you will be killed. And Paul goes, what? Let's go then. Why? Because for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. So I want to grab hold of the second part of this to start with. To die is gain. What is this place called heaven? You know, when you look in the scriptures and you read all the passages you can find about heaven, there isn't a whole lot of information. We know that the streets are made of gold. We know there's no more lying and dying and crying. But we don't know a whole lot about it. And I think we don't know a whole lot about it is because it's way beyond our imagination. And we're only limited by our imagination. It's a little bit like this. When you see a blind man, a person born blind, and you say to them, there's a tree over there, and they're going, where? And then you say to them, the tree is 20 foot tall. What do you mean? The base of the tree is tan in color. What is tan? The leaves are green. The flowers are red. I don't know what you mean. What's going on in their imagination is they're trying to picture what you're saying, something they've never seen before. And this is what it's like when Jesus tries to illustrate for us this place called heaven. It's beyond our imaginations. It's more than we could ever imagine. And the unfortunate thing for us as human beings is we limit the place. We limit our understanding. And I don't know about you, but I met so many people who would even say to me, I'd rather be in hell with my mates than in heaven without them. No, you don't understand it. There's nothing on earth that compares with heaven. Nothing. Heaven is beyond anything we could ever imagine. Heaven is the restoration of this place. Take out all the stuff that really stinks, that makes this place so rotten. And this is what heaven is. And even more. Heaven is perfection. Heaven is no limits, no crying, no dying, no pain. If you have a moment, read 1 Corinthians 15, 35 onwards. But I'm going to share a little bit of that with you. Because in that passage, it talks about us and what we're like in heaven. The only real similarity between me as I am now and me in heaven is this. From what I understand when I read it, is that you will be able to recognize me. But I will be perfect. I have no idea what that is. I don't know what perfect means. I've never seen anything perfect. Yet I know this, that I will be made perfect, and yet I will still be recognized. There are no limits for us in heaven. There's no dying, there's no aging. There's no time, no space, no atmosphere. There's no gravity. What I mean by atmosphere is a physical. There's no gravity. Do you know what? The reason God made the heavens, the reason he made the universe, the reason he made the galaxies was that one day we would explore them. And it won't be in a space shuttle. It'll be because we're limitless. We can do anything, absolutely anything. But here's what's good about the anything we can do. It's not affected by evil. It's all about good. In that passage, just I want to read one small portion of it, verse 47, and a couple of verses. The first man was from the earth and made of dust. The second man is from heaven. Like the man made of dust, so are those who are made of dust. Like the heavenly man, so are those who are heavenly. And just as we have born the image of the man made of dust, we will also bear the image of the heavenly man. That's Jesus. That's Jesus. That's what it's talking about. So what will we do in heaven? Whatever we like. What will we feel in heaven? We'll be in perpetual awe. I don't know, I'm guessing there's a lot of people here who have traveled different parts of the world and you've seen some sights that are just unbelievable. I think the most awesome thing that I've ever seen in my travels is I've been to the Iguazu Falls in South America, and you stand there and it's just powerful. It's just incredible. A photo doesn't do any justice to this place. You stand there and you walk out on this ramp, and when you're standing there, there's just a wall of waterfall all around you. And the power and the noise is just awesome. When we're in heaven, we're in perpetual awe, because every day we make new discoveries, and every day those discoveries are incredible. It's amazing. But the first part of the verse that Paul said was this. He said, for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. So what does it mean for us to live for Christ? To live is Christ. How I live is determined by my destination. When you go in a race, you aim for the finish line. And I remember when I was running the school cross country the year that I won it, and there was one guy who was on my shoulder the whole way, and I was so desperate because previous years I hadn't been able to become first in the cross country at school. This was my last chance in my last year. And as I ran towards that finish line, I was determined that this guy was never going to catch me, and I ran hard. And I remember the feeling of crossing that finish line. Our life is about this incredible finish line, and we are eyes focused and we are aiming for that finish line. Our motivation is to win. Every step reflected by our destination. We fear nothing on earth, not death, nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nothing present, nothing past, nor powers, or height, or depth, or nothing created. We fear nothing because we are motivated by the love of Christ. We take with us the gospel wherever we go. That's what Paul said to do. Take the gospel wherever you go. It tells us that the last days will be like the days of Noah. And I really believe we are in those days because it seems so much like the days of Noah. It said that in the days of Noah that people would do whatever they thought was right in their own minds. That's exactly what tempted us in the first place, for Adam and Eve to say, you make the rules. And we're becoming more and more a world we can see it in our own country as different laws are passed. No longer does God make the rules. In fact, it's so hard to even define what the rules are. And now what's right is wrong and what's wrong is right. And it becomes so confusing. So in the last days it says that people will do whatever is right in their own eyes. But we won't, because we're the people of God. We are heavenly minded. Our eyes are fixed on the author and the perfecter of our faith. We live for Christ because death is our glory. So what makes us different? What makes us different from everybody else? We know where we're going and we want to be there. Our hope is living, it's visible, and it's contagious. We are Christ's ambassadors, representatives of heaven. A light that cannot be extinguished, and salt for a dull existence to give flavor to this world. A sweet aroma to a pungent stench. We are in Christ. Nothing stops us. Nothing can stop us being what Christ has called us to be. So the question I ask to finish off, a simple question. Is this you? Did I just describe you? Because that's the question we have to face every day. We're coming to a time, I believe, in our world where it's going to be a battle to be a Christian, and you either hide or you stand up. And I committed from the very first day I followed Christ, committed to preach the gospel. And I know that it may mean that I get in trouble for it. But it's what he's called me to do. And if Paul could do it, then surely those who come after Paul can do it. Surely we can live for Christ and not let the world stop us, hold us back. Surely we can be a light, we can be salt. Father, I want to thank you, first and foremost, for your perfect plan. There is no plan that beats what you've planned. There is nothing that we can plan in our lives that betters what you have given us and what you have offered to us. There is nothing like heaven here on earth. And I thank you that you died on a cross to give us perfection, to give us that place. So that while we are here on earth, as Paul has said, we would live for you, we would represent you, and we would boldly stand up for you. I thank you for all those who put up their hands and say, I'm a believer, I'm a follower. Where Jesus says go, I will go. When Jesus says do, I will do. Because he has saved me for eternity. Father, I thank you that you are with us. You never leave us. You never abandon us. I thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.